Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Birmingham City on Saturday at Craven Cottage. Before we do anything else, I have to welcome my Cottage Talk co-host back to the show. David, how you doing?
I'm out of breath, Russ. I've been exercising all day ever since Fulham got wind that I used a perfume aftershave called Jazz. Yeah, and ever since I did that, I had a cold call from Kit saying, "Can you play right back tomorrow?" So I've been warming up. Well, if only I was fit enough, huh?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, listen, it's funny because we do have a couple topics.
Mike plays it right back, I believe.
Okay.
I think Mike plays right back, so he'll be before me in the queue anyway. But yeah, no, that's that's been the thing on my mind all day. Who on earth are we going to be playing it right back? Isn't it?
It's a huge question. We're going to be talking about that, and I was going to mention before we go into the Cottage Talk Roundtable, we have a couple of topics to go through. Let's start with the team news, and again, this came out early today. Again, this is right on the Fulham website. I'm just going to read from it. It says Kit Simons can be without his two first-choice right-backs on Saturday against Birmingham City, with Jazz Richards currently sidelined. Ryan Fredericks was forced to withdraw from the action at Turf Moor earlier in the week, leaving Fulham slightly light in that area. Here's a quote from Kit. Ryan Fredericks came off against Burnley, so he's unlikely to feature. Again, Kit also mentions that Kai Vozer is away for personal reasons, so he's not available. So, David, this is going to be interesting. Who will Kit play at right back? We'll be talking about that a little bit later.
Certainly, yeah. It's come at the same time, isn't it? As with Jack Grimmer injured as well, still.
Jack Grimmer's injured as well, yep.
Yeah, anyone who's played right back is unavailable, it seems. I mean, they've said might with Ryan Fredericks. I did notice that there was might, so I don't know if they have some hope of resurrecting him for tomorrow, but it would be foolish to play him if he's not fit, really, I guess, and risk making it worse.
Yeah, listen, in the article, it says unlikely, but again, it doesn't say he's out. It just says unlikely. So we'll see. You never know, David. Stranger things have happened, but it'll be interesting to see what Kit does at right back. And like I mentioned, as we get into the show, we'll be talking about that. But let's enter the Cottage Talk Roundtable. I just have a couple topics just to get us going, and then we'll be previewing the match. Let's start here. And this is something that's been bothering me for a while. We had this problem under Martin Yeo, and we're having the problem again. We've talked about it before. David, why do you think Fulham keep on giving up these late goals?
I think it's a tactics thing and a psychological thing more than a fitness thing. I don't believe we are, endemically unfit or less fit than other teams, but I think it's an inexperienced thing perhaps, how to close matches out, making the right moves to close matches out rather than just playing in a kind of a foolhardy way, I suppose. This is where you need experience. It's not just about time wasting, it's about keeping the ball, isn't it? Keeping possession.
Right.
Being cool. I think it's sort of being cool, really. Playing the right football and obviously a psychological thing, perhaps. You've got to, in your minds, be mentally tough and say we can hold out. I think it's sort of, It's tactics one, psychology two, and fitness would be number three, really, in the list of priorities.
Okay, very good. And, inexperience is definitely a reason I see. Again, they haven't played as a unit that often, and hopefully that will improve over time. I don't think it's a fitness issue, but who knows? I'm just going to share a comment from Roger Lewis, our friend Roger in Spain. Says, lack of concentration and the inability to play possession football when required. Time wasting is counterproductive, as has been proven. That's an interesting thought about time wasting. Again, Fulham were I can't remember what match it was. I can't remember what manager it was, was claiming Fulham were
Middlesbrough.
We're doing time wasting. It was Middlesbrough. That's right. It was the Middlesbrough match where they had a problem with the time wasting. What are your thoughts on potentially time wasting as being an issue? It wasn't in this match, but in some other matches.
Well, no, I mean, there's time wasting and there's time wasting. There's sort of deliberate time wasting and there's running the clock down, you know, by keeping the possession and using the ball to your advantage. And, you know, and if you can, you know, the goalkeeper can keep the ball, and as long as he's let it out of his hands, the goalkeeper can keep the ball. He can pass it between the back four and or whoever's at the back and things, and the midfield can keep the ball. You can waste time in a lot of ways, you know, not just the obvious time wasting is, you know, where you take too long to take goal kicks or throw-ins or something, but it's clever time wasting is what you need to do. This is experience. Anyway, and confidence as well, I think.
Right.
Going forward and, you know, and getting the ball into the corners, for example. But, I mean, we've seen it all. I mean, it's not just the younger players. I remember classically, and this is the worst bit of attempted sort of time-wasting ever. It was by Danny Murphy in the semi-final against Hamburg at home. In the very last
minute, I remember
when he got that free kick. That free kick after Dempsey was fouled by the goalkeeper, which was the goalkeeper was lucky enough to be sent off there. And Danny Murphy, all he had to do was play the ball and keep it in the corner, and he gave it straight to them, and they went up the other end. And we had, like, you know, the last 30 seconds of being scared until the referee blew the whistle. So, I mean, it isn't just about necessarily an experienced player or an inexperienced player, but certainly there's times, you know, when you need to keep the ball and keep it in areas where it's not dangerous, and I think it's a psychological thing as well. When the opposition are coming at you, sometimes you see a match turn. You know, like the Charlton match is a good example.
Yeah,
2-0 to Fulham, they just weren't even interested. Charlton, not really. They were completely out of the game. They'd given up. Their heads had gone, and then suddenly they got this goal out of nowhere. And you know, and then it was, they were all attack, and it's, where's this come from? You know, they couldn't do this the whole match, and then suddenly, you know, they're on our cases, and we're struggling to deal with it. Why can't we be stronger mentally and say, hold on a minute, you know, we've held them out all this time. Where do these things come from? So I think it's a psychological thing as well as a, you know, a tactical experience thing as well.
Very interesting point, David. Do you think, again, Fulham need to prove it to themselves, meaning that the players need to be in one of these tough matches where, say, maybe it's 2-1 and they can actually see it out and learn that, hey, we can do this. We can see a match out. And the fact that the Charlton match did happen is a step in the wrong direction. Maybe they can learn from that, you know, those issues that they had. That again, that showed me, I'm glad that you brought it up, it showed a lack of confidence near the end. I'm talking about that Charlton match. You know, again, a lack of belief that you could see this match out. And I think that confidence will come over time. I think they need to prove it to themselves. Be in a tough match, like I said, 1-0 or 2-1, that they actually can see it out and say, you know what, we can do this. We can win matches like that, because there are going to be other situations, David. They're going to be close matches. They're going to have to do that. They're going to have to be able to see a match out, and hopefully we will be seeing that improvement. But I agree with you. It's about confidence. It's totally about confidence. It's about belief. And they probably need to be in these situations and be able to actually see one out or see a few out. I shouldn't even say one. They probably need to do it a few times, then for it to become a habit. Would you agree with that? It might not just be a one-time thing. They probably have to do this over and over to then believe, you know what, we can win these close matches.
Well, it needs to be more than a one-time thing, because it's been much more than a one-time thing that we've been giving away these late goals. You know, it's
true.
It's very, very common, very, very commonplace we give away late goals. They're not necessarily always costly. I mean, the late goal at Burnley, infuriating as it was, didn't cost us the match, but it wiped out any glimmer of hope of maybe getting a late equaliser or something. But, you know, and that one I can understand a little bit, because we were throwing everyone forward for it. And so, you know, you take the chance sometimes when you do that by throwing people forward. Look at Middlesbrough at home against us last season, when we won with the last kick of the game, basically, because they threw everyone up, including the goalkeeper, for the corner. But it does happen far too much for Fulham. So we need there to be a run, you know, of matches where we hold them out narrow matches or even win matches at the end with late goals, you know, as opposed to the opposite, which has been happening.
Okay, very good there, David. Very, very interesting. Again, because unfortunately it brings me back to that team, that Martin Yole team, and I just hope it's just a matter of playing together and getting that confidence that they could see these matches out. And I agree with you. I think it can't just be a one-time thing. I think they need to do it over and over again and then have that belief that they can win close games, because there are going to be these situations that are going to come up. It could come up tomorrow for all we know. All right, David, second question. Who has been the best and worst team Fulham have played so far this season? Now, I know you haven't seen all of them in person, but I'm curious your thoughts. For you, who has been the best and who has been the worst?
Let me think. Out of the teams I've seen, certainly, I mean, worst. I mean, in terms of performance, QPR were pretty poor, weren't they? They just crumbled. I have to say, I think Charlton were pretty awful as well. And that, what does that say about us? The fact that where we are, I think Charlton were probably in a way worse because they just were falling to bits, and the fact that we let them back in the team into that game was shocking. So I think Charlton and QPR have been the worst I've seen, most certainly. Best I've seen? I don't. It's hard to say. I haven't seen anyone who I thought was outstanding. I mean, Reading looked quite good, obviously, in the first half. They obviously are a good, coherent team, but for somehow we did a job on them. So it proved that anyone can beat anyone. I believe,
right,
obviously, Burnley are a good team. I haven't seen the Burnley game, but I know Burnley have been consistent and are. A lot of people talk about them as being a good side, but I haven't seen them play myself, so I can't give you that one. So probably out of the matches I've seen at the Cottage, obviously I've been hampered this year by illness. I haven't been to as many matches as I would have done normally, so I have missed a few games. I haven't been away from home, and I've missed a couple at home also. But certainly, I'd say Reading were probably the best ones I've seen at the Cottage, even though we beat them.
Okay, how about Brighton? Were you at the Brighton match?
No, I didn't make that one. But again, I believe, you know, we matched them easily or, you know, comfortably in the main. And so we, you know, the result was a little unjustified in the end.
Of course it was,
but I was curious.
I wasn't sure if you actually saw Brighton. That's why I asked.
No, I haven't. I've seen some pretty poor ones at the Cottage, you know, such as, you know, Huddersfield, I think, were pretty average, and so were Leeds, but I think QPR were worse. Obviously, the way that we played and the way that QPR responded was worse, and certainly that Charlton match as well. Obviously, I only saw it on the TV, but you know, you saw the game. They were shot, Charlton. They were completely shot to pieces. They were there for the taking completely, and other results and their position in the table. David Hulley's first ever quote, I think, the table doesn't lie. You know, and the table doesn't lie. And it's the same when you look at people like Burnley. They're up the top there. So I guess what people are saying about them is true.
Yeah. The one thing I will say, David, before I go to the comments, Burnley, you know, again, for me it's Burnley because, you know, again, I watched the replay and I've watched all the replays. For me it's definitely Burnley. And it's not that they're this incredible team that's high over everyone else, above everyone else. I don't think that they are. I just think that they are a well-drilled team that is difficult to beat. They're just a consistent team, and you know, and it's a real team. So they're, to me, the best team Fulham have played so far. And the worst team, I you know, again, on that performance, for me, it has to be QPR. But I'll just share with you a couple comments here. Roger Lewis said, the best team has been Burnley, who we dominated in the second half. The worst has to be QPR. Grant Harris said, I'd say Burnley are the best by far, much more organized and deliberate in their play than anyone. The worst by far was Huddersfield Town, absolutely awful. What are your thoughts about Huddersfield Town?
That was a truly awful match, the one at the Cottage. That was, you know, Corley saved us with a late goal, didn't he, to get an equaliser. Saved me, actually, because I, for some strange reason, I haven't actually seen us lose when I've been there this year. I'll have to try and make sure I get there tomorrow if I can. I haven't been feeling too well, but I'm going to try and make it. But yeah, Corley saved my record that day. But that was a truly awful match. Both teams were very poor, really, that day. I didn't think much of Huddersfield at all. But as I say, no one has really scared me that I've seen. Out of the teams I've actually seen at the Cottage, Reading, I thought, it looked the most dangerous in that spell in the first half. They play, obviously, with a cohesion, and they play with a pace. And they've got some dangerous players there, like players like Blackman and everything, you know. And it was just that, for whatever happened, we managed to do a job on them. But, you know, I'm just glad that people aren't saying it's Hull the top team, because I'd never acknowledge that. We just couldn't accept that on Cottage Talk, that Hull were the best team in the league. But Burnley, I can...
Well, you know how I feel about Hull.
People. Yeah, I know. We share that one. That's something we agree on wholeheartedly, obviously. But Burnley, I was very disappointed the other night, because at 2-1, we were always in with a shout. And if you remember, actually, I predicted 2-1.
You did.
And with like a minute left, I thought, here, I'm going to have one on Russ here. I'm going to tell him I was right once again. And then they scored that damn goal, and I was furious. And I'm sorry, I said some naughty words on Twitter at that point, because I was annoyed that we let a goal in, and I was annoyed my prediction was wrong. But I did a poll afterwards, Russ, and 87% of people who replied agreed that I was right to use those words in frustration. I won't repeat what I said, but I'm sure you probably saw anyway.
Yes, I did.
I wasn't very happy, because I actually felt a big injustice, because I thought the whole of the second half, was literally all Fulham. And again, the stats don't always, those stats don't lie. Possession, I don't take too much from possession. Possession can be misleading. But when you have as many shots as they did, and when
it's
you have
correct.
Twice as many corners as they did, that shows you that possession was in the right part of the pitch, doesn't it? I mean, possession, you know, you can sit back and hog the possession and look like you were, like, dominating the match. And in fact, you didn't. You just sat back. But you could see from that obviously not only did we dominate the possession, but we had as many shots as they did. We had twice as many corners as they did. And therefore, you know, I think we were very, you know, justified to think we could have nicked something there, got a point out of it. So I was very, very annoyed with that. But saying that, take nothing away from them. You know, they showed how clinical they could be in the first half, really. And that's what we need to be.
We
need to be clinical like that. And there was a few eyebrows raised when Gray went there from Brentford, but it's been a pretty good signing for them so far. He's done well for them.
David, he was the difference in this match, you know, and I think you nailed it, because if you look at it, and you were just talking about the stats, it really is the difference between one team, taking advantage of their opportunities much better than the other. Because if you look at it, like you mentioned, even on total shots at 14 apiece, they only had one more on target than we did at 5-4. But the one thing that you mentioned, I'm glad that you mentioned this, if you look at the corners, 11-5, we had 11 corners to their 5. I mean, that is huge. Attacking passes, because it tells you where the ball was. Again, 331 to 232. So you get really an indication of what's going on here. That again, yes, we did have 60% to 40% of the possession, but we were really doing something with it. We just weren't clinical enough, like you mentioned. There weren't enough clear-cut chances. And when they had their chances, they scored. And they took advantage of them more than we did. And that was the unfortunate part of that, David, because that second half, we pretty much owned. They had a few opportunities. Let's be honest, you know, Dan Burnquist went off the line, and Gray also had an opportunity a few minutes before that hit the bar. But beyond that, Fulham really had the majority of possession. I know we talked that it's not all about the possession, but they were controlling the play. They just could not get that equalizer. They could not. And that's the frustrating part. But it also, David, I think it also shows progress. You and I have talked about, you know, you need to get the points, but you also need to have a performance. 3-1 makes it look really bad, but the performance, David, wasn't that bad.
No, that's right. I mean, the corners is the thing for me. I think that if you're going to get 11 corners in a difficult match against difficult opposition away from home, you've got to make them count, you know.
Right.
Maybe that's something we need to work on, our delivery or whatever. You know, in the days of Dempsey and Hangeland, we used to get a lot of goals from corners in their prime. And that's, you know, what you want to be doing. You know, if you're going to get 11 corners, you want to be scoring from these if you can. Or, you know, at least or making the goalkeeper work at least. You know, I think it's that's your best chance, really. When you go away from home, you know, to get up there, to have set pieces in their box, because you can't always guarantee to have lots of shots. Okay, we did. But, you know, it's a chicken and egg thing as well. You have the shots,
yep.
The goalkeeper saves, you get a corner perhaps, or it comes out, as I said before, you get a rebound. Until you take those shots, things don't happen. But, you know, you try and put crosses in, or you shoot, you get corners. Sorry, I was just distracted by something on the telly for a minute. There's a great clearance off the line in this FA Cup match that's on. But, no, it's I apologise for that. I say, that's the thing, 11 corners away from home, you've got to make one of those count. You've got to make one of those counts. Look at Charlton. They get a corner against us. The guy's not even warmed up. He's just come on and the ball's in the back of the net. You've got to be much more clinical on these.
Yeah, I hear you, David. And especially in the match coming up, and we're really going to get into that shortly, because this is a team that is actually going to soak up the pressure and look to beat Fulham on the counter. Again, I have so many quotes and indications that that is really the way that this team plays, Birmingham City. And I'm going to share some information with you that's going to back up exactly what I'm talking about, that we're going to have to take advantage of our opportunities, and we're going to have to be clinical tomorrow, because if not, they could take advantage of us. So, again, that's something to consider as we go into this preview. And I'm going to start it this way. Let's start with this post that was on the Fulham website. I want to get your thoughts on this before we go any further. This is actually right on the Fulham website. It's called Behind the Enemy Lines. It's it's basically talking to a writer with the Birmingham Mail. His name's Brian Dick. I'm just going to read a little bit from it. And these were some questions for him, and then I want to get your thoughts on it. This is to get us going with our preview of Birmingham City. Here was the question to Mr. Dick. How can we expect them to line up on Saturday? They went back to the 4-2-3-1 on Tuesday against Blackburn Rovers, and that's what I think they'll do again at the weekend. I'd be very surprised if that isn't the formation. So, again, we're looking at them probably playing a 4-2-3-1, David. And then he is asked this, how do you see the game going? I don't think it'll be 0-0 on Saturday. I can fairly confidently say that I think Birmingham will look to counter as has become their trademark, and I don't think they'll be too unhappy at all for Fulham to come on to them and then have the majority of the possession and then look to hit them on the break. But obviously it's clear to everyone to see that Fulham have got some very, very talented individuals. I think Birmingham will be aware of Ross McCormack and Moussa Dembele, a couple of players that they've identified as particularly dangerous. And he actually predicted, this writer predicted 2-1 to Birmingham City. So, again, David, that gives you a little bit of an indication that I really believe that they're going to be playing this counter-attacking game. What are your thoughts about that from the writer for the Birmingham Mail, Brian Dick?
Well, I guess he knows them pretty well, so you have to take on board what he's saying. I mean, previously they played, I remember them playing with a more of a classic 4-4-2 last season, where Cotterill had a kind of a floating role where he would play either left or right wing. He'd swap over, and he was quite dangerous. You know, he's got a good delivery. Although he's right-footed, I think he's got a good delivery from the left and right, and he's obviously scored against us, I think, both games last season. So I'm not sure where he fits into this. The 4-2-3-1. I guess he's obviously one of the three somewhere. But that's where they were quite good before, because they had sort of traditional sort of big guys up front, Birmingham, so the sort of guys who
yep.
thrive on crosses and stuff like that. But I haven't seen them this season yet, and I got to say, this guy that's quoted on the Fulham website, he probably knows them a lot better than we do. So
exactly.
Again,
exactly. And just so you know, David, again, it's been reported, but we know that the reports don't always turn out to be what happens on match day. But it is being reported that David Cottrell is a doubt for this match. So just keep that in mind. We'll see if he's in the starting 11. No one I like he will be because he happens to be a very good player, but he is a doubt for the match. All right. On top of that, I'm now going to share some... What?
So I was just going to say that may determine. They may play a different system if he's not available, of course, as well. But
true.
You know, because he does seem to normally operate in wide positions for them as a winger, out-and-out winger. But let's see what happens, whether he's there tomorrow.
Okay, very good. And, David, just to continue working into our preview, I'm going to share some quotes from Kit. Again, this is from him, his preview that you can actually read on the Fulham website. Again, just a couple quotes because, again, it just goes to our discussion on how we think, you know, how Kit thinks they're going to play, how the writer that I just read to you thinks they're going to play. Again, here's some quotes from Kit from today. Quote, "I don't think there are any real surprises with the way they play," Simon says, "and I don't think too many teams have been shocked come the end of the game by the way they play. They might have been beaten by them, but they wouldn't have been shocked by the way it's happened. They're very good at it. They've got a formula, and it works very well for them with the players they got. Ultimately, I think that's the key for it. You get your best of the playing for the players and at your disposal and maximize their ability." And I actually like that quote from Kit because I agree with him on that, and I'll just go a little bit further into the article. It says, "As the top scorers of the division, Fulham are clearly seen as an attacking force, and when asked if his side need to be mindful of Birmingham's willingness to let teams come on to them, Simons responded," again, another quote from him, "we've definitely got to be wary of it. I said to the players today, the first half especially might be very cagey, and I'm happy enough if we come at it's nil-nil at halftime. Hopefully we've been probing and passing the ball well and stretching them, but we might not get our rewards for the first period because they're a good side and they can soak up pressure very, very well. But if that's the case and it's nil-nil at halftime, I'd ask the people not to get frustrated and to stick with it. Keep doing the right things and then have the belief that our quality and our goal-scoring prowess will come to the force behind the 90 minutes before the 90 minutes is up, and that will do enough to win the game." All right, David. I think Kit kind of tells you how he thinks it's going to go. What are your thoughts?
Well, I would like Kit to be a bit more bold, really. I'd like Kit to say we're going to be coming out all guns blazing and try and get an early goal, because when teams come to play that sort of style, soaking up pressure, the only way really to beat them is to get a goal and force them to open up, I think, really. It's kind of, I know it's a chicken and egg again, because once you've got the goal, you don't need to open them up. But, you know, while they're not conceding a goal, they're just going to sit there and soak the pressure up and look to break you down, really. So you've got to get a goal sooner or later. And if you're kind of targeting, I suppose, you know, maybe to be nil-nil at half-time, then you're only giving yourself half the match to win it. When, you know, you want to be using the whole match to win it, of course. I'm not saying that a 1-0 win in the last minute or, you know, a goal in the second half wouldn't be welcome, because it would. You know, we don't have to win the match 10-0 or 5-0 or anything. 1-0, you know, in a close game would be a good result in this game. But I don't want to be, you know, making excuses for being too cagey in the first half, because we just think that's what we need to do. We need to still be causing them problems from the first minute. And remember, we are the home team again. And it's a lot of pressure. I think it's more pressure for them. This is why we've seen perhaps better performances sometimes away from home. There was a big pressure to perform at the Cottage and to get our fortress back and everything. But we've shown we can do it, you know, and we've shown we can be dangerous from the off. And I think really that's what we have to be looking to be tomorrow and in every home game. So don't hamper ourselves by giving them too much respect or by, you know, letting half a match pass by.
It's very interesting, David, because my feeling is similar to yours. Why not push for that first goal and, you know, again, try to get that first goal as quickly as possible, like you said. Then you're going to possibly change how they're going to play. And it sounds like he's kind of waiting. Again, he's predicting that it could go this way, that we're at halftime and it's at nil-nil, then the second half would be our opportunity. It almost sounds like, David, he's thinking that we're going to get to halftime. I just want to get to halftime even, and then we're going to take it from there. That's what it sounds like to me. Are you reading into that as well?
Yeah, and it's a bit negative in a way, and it's a bit too planned. And, you know, and as a cynic, I'd say the quality of his halftime team talks leaves a lot to be desired. So if we're relying on getting to halftime and then him coming out with some words of wisdom, you know, it might be a disappointing game for us, because, you know, it's... And I think it's just, you can't be as structured as this. I know you need to have a plan, a game plan, and a structure to things, but to effectively say we're going to just hold them out for the first half, I know he's not quite saying that, but
right.
That's the message you get. We're going to hold them for the first half and then go for it in the second half, perhaps. So you're making it harder for yourself, I think. And as I say, the longer that they break you down, and soak up your pressure, the more confident they'll be as well, I think, and that their system is working. So we need to disrupt their system from the very first minute.
You know what, David, if I can remember correctly, again, these are different teams. QPR, did they play a 4-2-3-1?
Yes.
Okay, so we are, again, going against a 4-2-3-1. Again, totally different teams. But we were able to take advantage of a team that played that system. So I agree with you, David. I don't think that you're going with this attitude that you're going to be conservative at home, you know, be so worried about them countering you and, you know, knowing that their game plan is to soak up your pressure force it upon them and get that goal, you know, create as much as you can early on and just have faith that your defense can hold up if they start to break. You know, have some faith, because, again, the defense is better than it was at the beginning of the season, and he should have belief that they can hold up against this team. This team doesn't score a tremendous amount of goals, and I'm gonna share some information to kind of back that up. They can score, but they're not prolific. So my issue is that what if you go in the half, David, down a goal? This is a team that, believe it or not, can hold that lead. So I think this is very important that Fulham get that first goal. And I don't want to see them go in a half at 0-0. I want to see them up at least 1-0 at the half. That's just my thought. And again, what I'm about to share could kind of back that up with our discussion. I don't think it's a good strategy to go in with the idea, let's just get to halftime and then we'll take them in the second half. No, you're at home. You take the initiative. You get that first goal. So it sounds like you and I are definitely on the same page on that. And David, before we break down the match and I go allow you to go into more detail, I'm just going to share some information with you about Birmingham City. Again, this is according to WhoScored.com. I love this website because it really gives me some very good information. Birmingham City have not scored, David, in their last three matches, which include two losses and a draw. And they do play, like I said, the majority of the time they do play a 4-2-3-1. They are currently sixth. They have 7 wins, 4 draws, 4 losses. They've scored 19. They've given up 15. They have a goal differential of +4, and they're on 25 points. Fulham are 11th. We've won 5. We have 5 draws, and we have 5 losses. So, again, it's pretty even there. We have scored 27. We've given up 23. Like them, we are +4 goal differential, and we're on 20 points. Their top players are left-back Jonathan Grounds. This is, again, according to WhoScored.com. These are the players they rate the highest. Center-back Michael Morrison and attacking midfielder David Cottrell, who is a doubt for the match. We'll see if he does play, though. Their leading goal scorer is Clayton Donaldson with 4 goals. He also is their leader in assists with 6. Okay. Their strengths, David, are creating chances with through balls, very strong doing that, shooting from direct free kicks, creating scoring chances, attacking set pieces, finishing scoring chances. They're all strong in that. Their weaknesses, They're weak in all of these areas: avoiding offside, defending set pieces, defending against through ball attacks, aerial duels, avoiding individual errors, and they're very weak in keeping possession of the ball. So again, Fulham should have the majority of possession. All right, their style: attacking down the right, take a lot of shots, long balls, attempt crosses often, attempt through balls often, play with width. They are non-aggressive. They have a consistent first 11. They're used to playing in their own half. That kind of goes with what we're talking about. Opponents play aggressively against them. So, David, it all comes back to centering around that they do soak up pressure and that Fulham should have the majority of possession. What are your thoughts about what I just shared?
Well, kind of goes along with what you've been saying, really. But, you know, it sounds like we need to be strong in the middle. We need to be looking for through balls for Moussa Dembele, getting him through if he's playing. Also, with them being, you know, susceptible to aerial duels, you know, it might be an option at some stage to employ Matt Smith as well. I'm sure he'll be pleased with that, because I think he comes from Birmingham originally, or around that way, so he'd probably want to get out there against them. But, yeah, I think strength through the middle again, really. You know, although they are adept at soaking up pressure, we will have to be strong in the middle. You know, they're good on through balls as well, apparently. So we need to stop that happening. So we have to make sure we're strong in the middle. So do we play three in the middle again? I don't know. This is going to be very interesting, because we are somewhat hamstringed by our injury crisis at the moment, or our sort of, you know, right back injury crisis anyway, as to what
right.
we do, what shape we play, and who can play. So it's going to be very interesting to see how we do line up against them. But I think in priority, we need to get our team right, and we need to get the players right out there, as opposed to worrying too much about, you know, how they play or who their best players are. We need to worry about our best players again. Sometimes it worries me too much that we think too much about the other team. I think first you've got to play your best team, then you tinker with it, or your tactics to, you know, match your opposition. But I don't think you should be too worried about changing your team because of their team or your formation. I mean, we've seen it work both ways. We've matched formations and we've done well, and we've not matched formations and we've done well. I don't think
Correct.
There's any black and white to it. I mean, first half at Burnley, we started well, but then the system didn't work. And in the end, second half, we were playing some sort of disorganized system, and yet we were the stronger team in the main. So, we were probably closer to matching their 4-4-2 at Burnley second half, although we had people playing in some strange positions. But, you know, it's difficult to say. So, as you pointed out, we beat QPR, who played a 4-2-3-1, and on that day we played basically a 4-4-2. But I'm not sure what we'll see tomorrow, because it's difficult to know which way he's going to go with the injuries.
It's a great point, David. We really don't know what Kit's going to do tomorrow because of those injuries, and we're going to talk about the right back position in just a few minutes. But before we do that, you know, again, the one thing that I can say, and I am someone that does want to think about what the other team is doing. You know, I want to think about matching up. Not matching up directly, but again, maybe countering on a different formation of what they're doing. But in this case, David, I don't think there are going to be any surprises. Kit's going to know how they're going to play. This is a team that basically does what they do, and that should give us an advantage. There shouldn't be any surprises here. You should know how to beat this team. It's going to be about execution, David. It's going to be setting us up correctly to beat this team, and that is going to be on Kit tomorrow. Kit needs to pick the right formation and the right players to counteract what this team's going to do. He's going to know what they're going to do. So it really is about setting them up and executing. That's the way I look at it. All right, David, let's start here. Who do you think will be the key players in this match tomorrow for Fulham?
It's a tough one. I mean, this really is a tough one for me. I mean,
would you go with the guys in the middle, because they need to control the play?
Well, I think you know, this game will be, you know, the midfield is going to be the key to it. Whoever wins the midfield could win the game, because both teams will be looking to maybe play through balls for their strikers, and the midfield which is most successful is going to be the one. So I think, you know, we're going to need a big performance from Jamie O'Hara and whoever is alongside him, whether it's Tom Kearney or Tiny Cliff or both, or whether we see Scott Parker back tomorrow, which is, you know, is a possibility, obviously, depending on who plays where. So, yeah, I think the midfield is going to be key, because saying that, you know, when you have one of these battles where it's tight in midfield, you know, sometimes it's where you need these kind of wing-back tight roles or wingers. You know, people getting round down the lines and behind them, behind, getting round the side of the kind of the log jam, yeah, and getting crosses in. So I could easily see that being an importance. I mean, if Husband is playing, Husband to be doing what he does, obviously to defend, but also to get along the line and round the back, get balls in, pull balls back from the byline, and, you know, get balls in behind them. That's the worst ones to defend when you're running back, when someone's around the back of you, because you're running the wrong way, and, you know, all you can do is kick it out for a corner or in your own net. The way you're facing, it's hard to stop the ball and turn. You know, the striker has that advantage because they're running in on goal. So I would love to see us somehow pull a phoenix from the flames and resurrect the 3-5-2 tomorrow, but I'm not sure how they're going to do it, really. Because, again,
well, let me ask you this. Like them to play a 3-5-2. Say they play a 4-4-2. I think a key player in this match, again, this is if Kick goes with a 4-4-2, and I think you're going to agree with me on this, could be Alex Kaczyniklic. I think if he goes 4-4-2, he plays Kaka on the left. What are your thoughts?
Again, that's a possibility. I mean, it all depends on who is in the midfield, because if he'll want Kearney to play, and there's other people who he'll want to play. So will there be a space for Kaczyniklic? Can he do it consistently? Because he's been... You know, last time he had a great second half against Reading. But, you know, again, he's been all two fits and starts, Alex, and we need to see a lot more from him. But he is a possibility.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is why I like the 3-5-2, because I think Husband can do all of that anyway. This is where it's all about a sleight of hand, as I was talking about in the last show.
Well, let me ask you this, David. And again, I like the 3-5-2. But against a team that soaks up pressure, would we be more open to counterattacks by playing the 3-5-2?
Well, theoretically not through the middle, because we've got three central defenders and we've got three central midfielders. So you would think we were strong. It's only on the wings where you don't have the people doubling up as such. But obviously, as Mike talked about, when you have this 3-5-2, One of the three central defenders also comes across to double up anyway, depending on which side is being attacked. So, you know, I don't necessarily think that the 3-5-2 is a weakness in that. Well, if you look at it just in the cold light of day, if you have a 4-4-2, you have two central defenders, you have two central midfielders. In a 3-5-2, you have three and three. So you're gaining two men. You're gaining two men, and you don't seem to be losing men. This is what I said. It's like a card trick almost. You know, it's a sleight of hand.
Right.
You almost got an extra man on the pitch, because those two wing backs are both defenders and midfielders. As long as they can keep up and down, keep going up and down, and do their job, it's like having five in midfield, and it's like having five at the back, depending on where it's going.
So, as long as they can track back, David.
Yeah, and that's the advantage of it. That's why it works. Can work so well, and we saw it work really well for us. And I would just, you know, after it works so well at Bristol City, I'd love to see it at home, but it's just, the key is going to be as to what Kit decides to do at right back, because if he's got no one who can play right back as a conventional right back, he may end up playing, you know, a midfielder there as a fudge, perhaps, but, you know,
he could play LVC there.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that was who I'm thinking. I don't necessarily think it's brilliant, because I don't really like seeing LBC play wide, and I don't think LBC has got enough about him defensively to do the running up and down and tracking back. So I think it could be very dangerous. But if he was going to go the 3-5-2, I think he might be the one that goes there. Obviously,
okay.
You know, the other options are someone, you know, like Donnelly, who hasn't played, Bodiroff,
right.
who has also played at right back once or twice, and of course, Tunnicliffe has played at right back before, you know,
he has.
For us once or twice. So it's going to be whether he, Ian Tunnicliffe will run all day for you. I mean, he doesn't have the pace, you know, of Fredericks, but, you know, he could try and play Tunnicliffe in that position as well. But I think, you know, it's going to be very dangerous because Tunnicliffe's done a great job in the middle to move him out. So this is going to be a real, you know, I don't think anyone's going to be able to guess the lineup for tomorrow, really. This is going to be a real, not even me. I've been lucky lately because Kit's fairly easy to read, I think, you know, and he's, he, you know, you kind of get an idea of what he's going to do.
Yeah.
By some kind of piece of luck, we kind of saw the 3-5-2 coming, but because we've been talking about it enough, and eventually it came true. But I don't know tomorrow really what's going to happen. I think
okay.
you know he would probably go for 4-4-2 and play someone like Bodiroff or Donnelly there as a conventional right back. But I would like to see him, if there's a way to do it, play the 3-5-2.
Okay, and David, you know, again, the way you're describing, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, so I'm just going to ask you, you don't think, again, if he goes with 3-5-2, you don't think that it would leave us any more exposed than playing a 4-4-2 against a team that is very good at counterattacking?
Well, it depends, obviously, where the counterattacking is coming from, doesn't it? But the logic to me suggests if you've got three central defenders and three central midfielders, you should, you know, it should be tighter in those areas. So you're less likely for them to run through the middle of you. I mean, I can't remember, what was that match last year where someone ran all the way through the middle of us? It was embarrassing for one goal at Craven.
Yeah,
Cottage.
I remember that.
I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, they ran all the way through. It was awful. But, you know, you think with three central midfielders and three central defenders, that should be less likely. And you would restrict them to, you know, having to beat you down the wings. I know it's not as simple as that, you know. These systems are never exact sciences, but that's the theory, isn't it? You know, with the 3-5-2, force them wide, force them to attack you down the wings.
Sure.
And
sure. My only concern, again, nothing against the 3-5-2, David. You've sold me on the 3-5-2. It's just that they've played the 4-4-2 more often, and when you're playing against a team that pretty much plays their system being a 4-2-3-1. You know, my thought is that you go with something that you're better equipped or have played more often, which is the 4-4-2. That's the only reason why I'm thinking 4-4-2 rather than a 3-5-2. I see why you want to go in that direction. And if Kit goes in that direction, I'm not going to be against it. But I, you know, again, maybe I'm being a little bit conservative, saying, you know what, go with a 4-4-2 because you played it more often against a team that is pretty much, you know what they're going to do. You know, again, you know how they're going to play against you, and you might as well play a system that you played more often. That's the only reason why I'm thinking 4-4-2, David, if that makes any sense.
Well, we don't have anyone to play right midfield, really. Fredericks could play right midfield if we were playing a 4-4-2 and if other people were available, but he's not available. And, you know, and LBC's kind of been playing there, but it's not his position, you know. And then if you play Alex left midfield, then you're back to sticking Kearney probably as a right
midfielder
again.
Kearney on the right, yeah, I know.
Yeah,
and that's not his best position.
No, so this is the problem with the 4-4-2. From the players we have, the 3-5-2 actually suits us better, bar the issue of the fact that we don't have a right back at the moment.
A right
really.
Back, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Apart from that,
David, I truly believe, you know, again, this is just me thinking, I would say 3-5-2 tomorrow if we knew Fredericks could play. If Fredericks could play, I think you go 3-5-2. The only reason why I'm thinking 4-4-2 is because of the issues that we're having at right back and that also the familiarity that you have with 4-4-2. But, again,
Well, yeah. If we play 4-4-2 And, yep. you know, I'd say you'll be looking at Bodaroff or maybe Donnelly coming in at right back.
Right.
Both of these guys are...
How about Sean Kavanagh?
He's left-footed and he's quite weak.
Okay.
To play him on the wrong side, I don't know. That would be very dangerous as well, I think. I mean, I saw someone putting Luke Garbutt at right back, but I'm not convinced of him at left back yet. So to put him at right back, that's a real
okay.
big thing. I mean, you know, it's justified as an argument because lots of times we've played right backs at left back. You know, Richards has played at left back before, even though he's right-footed, and you've seen
right.
it with other players. You know, it's okay to play a right back at left back, but it's not okay to play a left back at right back. So I take your point completely, but. My money would be on a 4-4-2. It would be someone like Bodaroff or Donnelly. And
okay.
the problem that is, because they are predominantly centre-backs more than sort of right-backs out and out, there's going to be no progression up that wing. They're not people who can attack up the line. And if you've got someone in front of you like Kearney or even LVC, there's going to be absolutely no width. So you're playing this 4-4-2, but you've got no width at all. No
you would only have it on one side. You basically probably only have it on one side.
So, yeah, I mean, all the attacking would be coming down the left, if at all. But then
correct.
if they get a man to stop Husband or Kakanicic or even Pringle if he was playing, then we're going to be falling into their trap. We'll be sat to play through the middle. And if we've only got two central midfielders, they're just going to soak it up. And so, you know, this is why we need to do something maybe slightly out of the box, I think.
Okay. This is what... Again, David, I'm glad that you and I could do this show because I find it fascinating trying to figure out exactly how Kit's going to handle this because he's got some I wouldn't call them problems. He just has issues on how he's going to handle things because there are several ways he could go here. And, again, we only have about 8 minutes left. I'm just going to share some thoughts that some of the Fulham supporters have on right back because we've been talking about it. And we'll start with Roger Lewis. He says, I don't know if Garbutt can switch over. If not, I suppose it will be LVC as he's played there at youth level. Bodaroff and Hutchinson are alternatives, but it's a dire situation. So that's coming from our friend Roger Lewis. Let's see. Anthea Evans said 4-4-2, Ream right, Stearman, Byrne, Husband, 3-5-2, no right back, wings, Husband left, Kaka right, wrong side, and no defender. And David Mitchell says LVC at wing back. So again, and then Charlie Boy says he likes that idea. So if you are saying, David, to have LVC at wingback, what are your thoughts about what our friend Anthea shared in New Zealand?
Well, I think if you are going to play LVC, you probably are as well to play the 3-5-2. So LVC has a position which is more reliant on going forward than just a defensive position because, you know, in the 3-5-2 you have Stearman to come across and cover, you know, as you say, when they pivot round. So if it is going to be LVC, I'd rather see a 3-5-2 than a 4-4-2 if LVC's in that position. Otherwise, I don't know what Anthony was saying. I'm confused by what Anthony was saying. She was
it was actually a little confusing because 4-4-2, Ream right, Stearman, Burn, Husband, then she says 3-5-2, no right back, wings, Husband left, Kaka right, wrong side, and no defender?
I think Ansi has been reading the Felix McGath Book of Tactics or something in a spare time or something, or had a glass
okay.
of that delicious New Zealand wine because I certainly wouldn't play Kaka as a wing back on the right because he's very weak defensively, I think, anyway, at the best of times. And we've seen him on
yep.
the right. Doesn't really work for him on the right anyway. So, but I would, you know, if Kaka was our only sort of line of defence on that wing, I would be very worried. So I wouldn't play Kaka
yep.
as wing back on the left, not let alone on the right, so no.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so she's going with the wing backs in the 3-5-2 as being Kaka and Husband. So so I think I finally understand it. I think I finally understand where she's going on that. It took me a little bit, David. All right, believe it or not, we only have 5 minutes left, so we have to ramp this thing up. Again, David, this has been fascinating because I don't know exactly what to expect tomorrow. So it's very difficult for me to ask you what Kit's going to do, David, because I don't think you know what he's going to do. I don't think I know what he's going to do. So I'm going to change it up. I'm going to ask you, give me your starting 11 and your formation. So let's go back to what we would do
either.
Normally.
That's not fair. Can I pick Mike Gregg at right back? Because he says that he's a good right back. So and he's ahead of me because I'm not fit anyway, unfortunately. I'm still suffering. But, I mean, well, some of it's easy to pick because we've only got one fit goalkeeper, literally. He's one fit senior goalkeeper.
Okay.
So I think, you know, we're gonna see most of the team that played up at Burnley, I think. Obviously, it's... I mean, potentially the only change is Fredericks. Potentially, you could see LVC as a straight swap for Fredericks, and keep everyone else as they are. Or, obviously, if he brings in Donnelly or Bodiroff, we need a bit of a change because if we do switch to a 4-4-2, then someone in midfield is going to be displaced. So, Dan Burn, I guess, would probably be the one who gets displaced, of course, because obviously he's
right.
the. He's normally the target, you know, because Kit seems to favour Spearman and Tim Ream, of course. So Dan Burn would be the loser if we switched to a 4-4-2 in that respect, because you'd probably see Kearney, Tunnicliffe, O'Hara, and maybe LVC retained in midfield. I wouldn't mind seeing Scott Parker come back in for this, though, somehow, if they can fit him back in. His experience and his battling skills, perhaps, against a team that like to dig in. But I'm not sure how it would fit in at this stage. But he's certainly going to get back on the place on the bench, I think, with the injuries and with Matilla also out.
Okay. So is this the starting 11 that you think that you'd want, or is this the starting 11 that you think it's going to go with?
Well, yeah, I really don't know. I mean, I'd say it's... I will throw caution to the wind and bring in LVC for Fredericks.
Okay.
Assuming Fredericks doesn't make a miraculous recovery.
Okay.
And then it's an unchanged team, isn't it? I think 3-5-2.
Okay. So basically, the only change you're going to make is the LVC for Fredericks. And do you think? And again, this is just your opinion. Do you think he'll go 4-4-2, or do you think he'll go 3-5-2?
No, if you're going to bring LBC in for Fredericks, you're going to be playing as a 3-5-2, because otherwise
3-5-2.
You're going to have to play Stearman at right back or Dan Burn at right back, and I don't think we're going down that route again somehow.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay. So
I mean,
you're going with the idea that Kit's going to go with a 3-5-2, and David, I see why you're going with that. I don't know why. I just got a feeling he's going to play a conservative based on the comments, and I think he's going to go 4-4-2. That's just my thought. He's going to go back to what he's been using the majority of the season.
No, I think you're right, but I don't think it will work, and it's going to be difficult because I think we'll just be playing into their hands if we do. But let's see what happens.
Well, that's what I don't want to see, David. You know, again, it goes back to the comments. If you're planning for 0-0 at the half, you're basically saying, well, let's just get to halftime. And, you know... And again, I disagree with that philosophy. I want to see Fulham get that early goal. But listen, we don't have much time left. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to read the predictions. Boy, you and I really whipped through this. So share with me your prediction for the match, David, quickly. We only have about a minute left.
Something like a 2-2 draw.
You're going 2-2 draw? David, I'm going for a 3-1 Fulham victory and a hat trick by Moussa Dembele.
Oh, my God.
Yes. I think we're going to score that early goal, and I think we're going to get a couple more. I think this is going to be like the QPR match. I'm going to say 3-1. I know that they're defensive in nature, but I think we can win this match.
I guess it's your turn for the white coat men this week, then.
It's my turn. David, excellent show. I really enjoyed this, my friend. You were excellent tonight. Thank you very much, my friend.
No, thanks. So sorry for the distraction watching football in the background while talking to you, but
That's at least okay.
I can more or less multitask
okay. Anyway. All right, well, I got to wrap this up. For David Holly, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cotter's Talk. Cheers, David.
Cheers, Russ. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
The fire away down, now war is declared, and battle. your boys and girls, London calls.